Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thanks very much for tuning in again to the Explaining History podcast. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about the declaration of war in India against Nazi Germany in 1939. Before we get started on all that, we're going to be showcasing something a little bit special at the end of the podcast today. There's a new series of podcasts that I've become involved in writing. So there's an audio service called AudioPi that's primarily designed for GCSE and A-level students. But they produce an amazing standard of audio experience for learners who are interested in history, both modern and otherwise. And it's well worth a listen. It covers exam specs fully. And they've got a number of great writers, myself included, and some key academics on the case. So hold on till the end of this audio, and you'll be able to listen to a sample of what AudioPi does. And you'll also be able to get a discount code, so if you go through to their website, you can download and purchase AudioPi podcasts with a 10% discount. So hang on for all that at the end. Okay, so the declaration of war on Nazi Germany by India is a decision that is taken unilaterally by Lord Linlithgow, the British Viceroy to India, without the consultation of either of the two main political parties, the Congress Party or Muhammad Ali Jinnah's Muslim League. The decision to take India to war has traditionally been viewed by historians as a contributory factor in the end of empire shortly after the Second World War. Now, I've talked a lot about this subject, but there's a new and really excellent book out, India's War, by Srinath Raghavan, well worth a read. And the thesis that he puts forward is that India goes through no less a kind of a social revolution during the Second World War, that the Indian Army goes from being the kind of the regional boot boys for the British Empire, keeping Britain's Asian Empire in place, to being a kind of a military superpower in its own right, and it has well over a million soldiers in uniform at the end of the war. It can safely said to be that. And by the end of the war as well, the Indian Army is no longer willing to listen to British orders. Following at the end of the war, it's very difficult to keep places like Malaya in check, because deploying large amounts of Indian manpower there is no longer an option. India's army quite literally is a superpower in its own right. Now, one of the reasons why I'm so interested in this topic area and in the war in the Golden Crescent from essentially from Calcutta to Rangoon is because by and large, India's contribution to the Second World War has been overlooked in generally a most unjust and unfair manner. No doubt motivated really by the way in which Europeans, Americans and others prefer to remember the war, essentially a kind of a white affair, let us not mince our words here, and the idea that the war was won in Asia by, for the most part, Asian peoples is something that is still not a part of overall received wisdom when it comes to kind of dominant narratives of the Second World War. But hopefully that will change. One of the interesting things to note in Raghavan's book is that the depth of feeling within Indian civil society about Hitler's invasion of Poland. There was widespread anger and outrage across Indian newspapers about an invasion that was happening thousands of miles away to peoples who were utterly unconnected to middle-class Indians. And it shows you that Indians were not simply passive colonial subjects whose main relationship was with their European colonial masters. These were engaged, globalised citizens who looked to world affairs in exactly the same manner that anybody else did. And whilst this should not be a surprise to any of us, it seems actually to be slightly at odds with the narrative that we understand. And the only reason for that is because normally the dominant story of the Second World War, these kinds of ideas are not really included in the narrative. The fact that all over the British Empire, colonial subjects in Africa, in India, in the Caribbean and beyond might have had a view on Hitler's actions in Europe and what the empire needed to do and what should be done and what shouldn't be done, again, is rarely discussed. Normally, we take a view on what the so-called white dominions of particularly of Canada and Australia seem to think, New Zealand and South Africa, and what their view was. And again, when we do that, we're buying in unconsciously and unwittingly into older and essentially more racist ideas that it was the business of white dominions to be concerned about war in Europe, and African and Asian colonies needed simply to kind of do as they were told. And it's interesting that this seems to have been the view of Lord Linlithgow himself. Lord Linlithgow, the Viceroy of India, the King's man in India, who simply announced that India would be going to war. His decision to ignore the Congress was one of high politics. Any engagement with the Congress party would have caused, for as Linlithgow thought, all sorts of trouble. It would have involved having to grant Congress concessions. It would have involved having to make some sort of statement that would potentially play out against British interests in the long run. And Linlithgow had an ace card up his sleeves. Linlithgow had good relations with the princes and maharajas of India's princely states. The old rulers of these states looked to the British as being their salvation. They raised money for the war, they raised men for the war, and they looked with great suspicion at Congress. Congress and people like Nehru within it, to them, were potentially the communists of the future in the making. I'm not suggesting that Nero actually was a communist, but certainly had deep sympathies for socialism and Gandhi's concern for India's untouchables and his rather Tolstoyan belief in the kind of the goodness of peasant labour and artisan homeworking and the possibility of creating a very pluralist and egalitarian India after independence, obviously terrifies the Maharajas and princes of India, who didn't want to give up any of their considerable wealth. So Linlithgow was able to appeal to the princely states, who were then supplied him with men and finances. And it was evidence that the British were already raising troops for the war in India, irrespective of what Congress wanted, which weakens Congress's hand. In London, you had in the new war cabinet of Neville Chamberlain the return of Winston Churchill, who had spent most of the 1930s on the backbenches purely because of his opposition to any kind of political reform in India. And he was well known for making deeply offensive statements about Gandhi, whom, whilst may not have been enormously popular with the British establishment, there was always some degree of sympathy for him, and amongst the British public in general, some degree of sympathy for India as represented by Gandhi. Churchill is adamant that no concession should be made to India whatsoever. Churchill had apparently his longest spell in India in the 1890s, only been for 10 months, but he came back with a firm conviction that he knew everything he needed to know about India, and India was the source of England's glory, but must be kept tightly controlled. And later on, during the war as Prime Minister, he demonstrates his views towards India during the Bengal famine, which I think I've mentioned previously. There's a podcast on Calcutta I did a few months ago that I think you might find useful on that score. And it's a pretty ugly side to Churchill. Linlithgow had a suggestion that the Congress might be supplied with information. They might be supplied with information that was considered sensitive or pertaining to defence. And this is vetoed by the British War Cabinet. And it was considered that this would be a wonderful way to pass information on to the Germans, and there were all sorts of characters like Subhas Chandra Bose who may well do such things. So this was vetoed right away. Chamberlain is far more sympathetic towards granting concessions to the Congress Party. He believed that there were.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As a justification for doing this, if we were going to ask Indians to sacrifice themselves in large numbers to fight for the British Empire. The outbreak of war was also an opportunity for Muhammad Ali Jinnah and the Muslim League. Originally, the British had been giving some thought to a federated India, perhaps with dominion status, in which Jinnah could see the states with large Muslim populations, the way the sort of voting demographics broke down, being poorly represented within a future federated Indian government. And so Jinnah put pressure on the British to abandon this project, and to give an announcement that Muslim support for the war — he outright condemns Hitler, but he says the Muslim support for the war would have to ensure that, and he puts it ambiguously, justice is done to India's Muslims, which could mean a large number of things. Linlithgow is happy to grant concessions to Jinnah and to have a kind of a cordial dialogue with Jinnah, because it prevents Jinnah from teaming up with the Congress. British strategies of politically of divide and rule in India go back a long way, and this was no different, really. This was an opportunity to, again, steal energy from the political power of the Congress in 1939, following Linlithgow's unilateral declaration of war. Another interesting aspect of this political debate within India at the time is the position of the Communist Party of India. The Communist Party of India have a deep connection to the Communist Party of Great Britain, and essentially take their ideological line in an ironically colonial manner from the Communist Party of Great Britain. And the Communist Party of India fall in with the broadly Comintern approach to the war, that in 1939 there are the war is to be ignored, in as much as it seems to be a squabble between imperialist powers, none of whom are of any kind of moral fibre whatsoever. And the real reason for this is obviously Comintern in Moscow is not going to encourage a war against its new friend Hitler, following the conclusion of the Nazi-Soviet pact, even though anti-fascism is at the heart of European and Asian communist parties throughout the 1930s. And it's only in 1941, when the Soviet Union is invaded, that communist parties can realign themselves alongside democratic governments and colonial governments in the waging of war. But it presents quite a crisis to the Indian Communist Party, who are in this very difficult position whereby the fascism that they have decried throughout the 1930s, they have to become quite muted about from 1939 to 1941. However, some dissenting Marxists, such as M.N. Roy, opposed this idea and said that essentially as long as any war is against Hitler, then it would be supported by, or should be supported by, Indian Marxists. And this was not popular with the kind of the doctrinaire Stalinists of the Communist Party of India. Linlithgow did have the legal right, granted by the Government of India Act, to declare war on India's behalf. However, this de jure power would have been pretty irrelevant if the vast majority of Indians would become unwilling to be mobilised to fight. The Quit India campaign from 1942 onwards almost threatens to bring Britain's war against Japan to an end. So it shows you that the key to getting India into the war was mass consent. It wasn't sort of legal diktat. And mass consent is achieved, or at least partial consent is achieved, by Congress believing that something can come of the war, that concessions can be taken from the British, or that the British can be placed in a sufficiently weakened position that independence becomes inevitable. And the Muslim League believe, again, that Muslim soldiers who were mobilised in huge numbers to fight for Britain, that their efforts will eventually enable a separate Muslim state, a future Pakistan, to be a possibility for India's Muslims. The thing about India that I think it's worth focusing on here is that India is within the British Empire, but it becomes almost a kind of like a subset of the British Empire. India by 1939. Was a kind of a regional empire of its own within Asia. It from East Africa to China. The Indian troops had been deployed since the kind of the late 19th century and the early 20th century, and the migration of workers, of merchants, traders, financiers, a whole Indian diaspora around the Indian Ocean and into Southeast Asia meant that Indian financial and cultural power spread throughout the region. India was, in many ways, developing the institutions and the attributes of the dominions that were now autonomous powers in their own right, and autonomous decision makers in their own right on the eve of the war. I think there's something interesting in all of this particular part of the story of India and the war that later explains Japanese misapprehensions and misunderstandings about India. Japan had already, by this point, courted Subhas Chandra Bose and the development of an Indian national army. The kind of the core of an Indian national army would begin at around this time and over the next couple of years. And the view that many of Japan's top soldiers had came from Subhas Chandra Bose. And if you're not sure about Chandra Bose, go back to the archive and you'll find a podcast on him. The view that Japan had was that India obviously desired independence, and that Indians would welcome another Asian nation, a kind of a leading Asian, an Asian sort of father nation, to throw the British out and rid Asia of Europeans once and for all. But what we can see here is that a civil society within India was making all manner of judgments and calculations and guesses and assumptions about removing the British themselves. The belief that another colonising power would be a substitute to Great Britain was largely rejected amongst the political and business classes in places like Delhi and Calcutta. Bose, in his darkest imaginings, didn't believe that the Japanese would colonise India, and probably the Japanese wouldn't have done in terms of manpower alone. They were hoping that the British would be rid of would be forced out of India by simply an uprising of the Indian peoples. However, any post-war settlement would have drawn India and the rest of Asia into a Japanese economic sphere, which would have primarily benefited Japan. The story of why India fights Japan with such determination is perhaps one for another time. But what we can see in this story anyway is that the decision by Linlithgow to unilaterally declare war is not met with passivity. It's not met with outright opposition either. It's met with negotiation and calculation, and a range of different parties, from the Muslim League to the Congress to the princely states to the communists and others, all have their own different perspectives on what the war means, what opportunities it offers, what risks it carries with it, and what the obligations of Indian people to the world and to each other and to the idea of India itself actually are. Okay, so I hope you found that useful, and you can catch me today at 4 p.m. and every other Monday at 4 p.m. on the Explaining History Facebook page. I'm doing a live talk today about everyday life in Soviet Russia, Stalin's Russia, that is. Now, about that 10% discount I mentioned. So you can go to www.audiopi, that's spelled A-U-D-I-O-P-I, no E, P-I, audiopi.co.uk, and apply the discount code Explaining History when you go to the checkout, and you'll get 10% off. So this applies whether you're a school taking out a subscription or just buying a one-off series. And here is a sneak preview. Enjoy.
The mist of a November dawn doesn't shroud the smell of mud, dried sweat, or the latrine. Yet there's something different in the air. Silence. The guns have stopped. So's the shouting. What next? Welcome to AudioPie's GCSE series on Germany between 1919 and 1945. During this series,
to find out more, go to www.audiopie.co.uk and quote the promo code EXPLAIN when you get to the checkout. AudioPie, inspiring education.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.